Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time, JTET for short. My name's John Steele. I'm one of the regular co-hosts of this pod. If you're a regular listener, you'll know what's coming. But in case we have any new listeners joining us at the start of a very exciting, brand new J-League season, I'd like to say a quick welcome. And if you're not sure what you've got yourself into, basically, JTET is the younger brother of the main JTalk podcaster. The JTalk pod focuses on J1, whereas on JTET we have a J2 and J3 beat. So we're looking after the second and third tiers of the Japanese game. You're welcome to stick with us for the 2022 campaign. You'll hear me and various other regular co-hosts as well, such as Stuart Smith and James Taylor. And on a J3 tip, we have our resident expert, Mike Innes, who looks after all the J3 business in the JTalk short corner segment each week. But we also have a rotating kind of panel of experts, guests, and pundits to help us to try and make sense of the action in J2 and J3. I hope you'll come along for the ride with us in 2022. It's sure to be another spectacular season, probably in a positive and negative sense, on a weekly basis. It's usually a pretty chaotic down here, to be honest. You join us for this podcast, part one of our big J2 season preview for 2022. In a minute, you're going to hear me sitting down with Sean Carroll, Japanese football journalist and expert. We talked about seven teams that will be taking part in the J2 for this season. In part one, we discussed the four teams that have been relegated from J1. So that's Tokushima, Oita, Sendai and Yokohama FC. And then after a quick break, because I needed the toilet, we came back and we talked about three teams that finished near the top of the standings. Last year, we discussed Kofu, Nagasaki, and also Machida Zeldia. And before I press play and we get into it, I should mention, Sean and I had this conversation before Machida announced the kind of rock the city signing of Brazilian striker Vinicius Araujo, who's recently left Montedio Yamagata. So maybe our discussion about Machida would have been a little bit different if we'd known about that signing in advance, but we didn't, hence why I'm mentioning it now. But yeah, I think that's enough sort of inane rambling from me. Here comes part one of our JTET J2 season preview. Hope you enjoy it, and I hope you come back for part two and part three and stick with us for the rest of the season as well. But on with the show. Enjoy the episode, and hopefully talk to you soon. Bye for now. Welcome back, everyone. John Steele here again, and I'm joined to help me to preview our first slate of teams for this season's J2 by Sean Carroll. Sean, happy new year at last, and how are you doing?
Happy new year to you too, mate. I'm doing very good, thank you. Very good.
Fantastic. I know you've got a busy day ahead, Sean, as you were telling me in the green room beforehand, so we'll get straight into it without any further ado. Now, we have four teams coming down from J1 into J2 for 2022. On the face of it, that's a scary prospect for any J2 sides who are hoping to kind of, you know, get into the playoffs or mount their own promotion push. But to be honest, looking at the four teams, and we're talking about Tokushima, Oita, Sendai and Yokohama FC, they're not the most intimidating quartet, I don't think, at least on paper. So I'll get your thoughts on them in detail in a moment, I suppose. Let's start by talking about Tokushima, finishing 18th in J1 last season. They've retained their coach, Daniel Poyatos, for this year. And there are one or two interesting ins and outs as well that we can talk about. But I don't know, the squad seems to have been pretty heavily gutted in terms of important players leaving. So I don't know, how are you feeling about Tokushima at the moment, Sean, about a month away from the season starting?
Yeah, I think what you said there is right. The squad is pretty much, they've lost a lot of not just like the regular starters from last year, but I think like the key players from last year. And they lost their goalkeeper, they lost their captain, the central midfielder, Iwao's gone as well. And then pretty much all the other options that played there. Fujita's gone, Suzuki's gone, Konishi, is it, has gone as well. Like, so they've really been gutted. They kept the manager, who I cannot help but read his name in my head as Danny Potatoes every time I see it. every time I see his name written down, I just think, good old Danny Potatoes.
So, I didn't have that problem, but I will forever from now on. So thanks,
well,
thanks
I,
for that.
Yeah, I was hoping that I.
Well, I was hoping that I could share. You know, a problem shared is a problem halved, as they say. So I was hoping by sharing it with you and the listeners, I've doubled it. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, many apologies. But yeah, the good old Danny Potatoes, I think, is gonna. He had a difficult year last year just because he couldn't get in the country at the start of the season. So obviously he was doing what is now pretty much the norm for foreign coaches, the new foreign coaches anyway, is he was kind of coaching remotely, which I can't imagine how that is a particularly effective way to do it. So he had a difficult start, and obviously was coming in, taking over from Ricardo Rodriguez, who'd been there for, I think, 4 years and then really, you know, built up a good team. So he had a difficult start. So yeah, he had a big job last year, and I think this year too, the expectation, I guess, is always when teams drop down is to go straight back up. But when you've lost at least half, if not two thirds of your starting 11 from the previous year, I think, yeah, he's going to have quite a task ahead of him. Yeah, you said they've brought in a few players, but I mean, looking through the list of players who've come in, there's none that really leap out that you think, yeah, that's a really good pickup. They've brought in some solid sort of J2 players. Shirai, that was at Okayama, has been decent. He did well at Mito as well a couple of years ago. They've got Abe back from Okayama as well, the centre back. But yeah, nothing really that you think is going to replace the ones that have gone out. So obviously they're dropping down a level as well. So they don't need to be as good as they were last year in terms of playing personnel, but J2 is getting better, I think, each year, so it's not going to be easy. So I think, yeah, he's going to have another difficult season, I think, and it will definitely be important to get off to a good start. It sounds obviously, it's an obvious thing to say, but I think last year they were always trying to catch up from the difficult start they had, and I don't think they can really afford to do that.
Yeah, I think that kind of tallies with my view. In terms of players coming in, I think Ryoga Ishio coming in at the back from Kanazawa has potential to be a decent signing. I think last time we spoke on the pod, we talked about Shunto Kodama, right, when he was on loan at Sagamihara, I think, from Nagoya. I think he's going to be at Tokushima for next year. So I think that fits the bill of like an interesting pickup, but not box office. And then I really like Shota Fujio, the striker, who is on loan at Mito for a while, I think, for the end of last season, but he's going to be on loan at Tokushima for this year. I'm not sure if it's a full transfer. I'm pretty sure it's a loan. He is also a good player, but I'm in agreement with you, Sean. I think that Tokushima side at the moment, the squad looks like an upwardly mobile J2 squad to me, and not, yes, not kind of a dead cert for promotion or anything like that. So
yeah, I think, yeah, those the guys you mentioned, yeah, I agree. I've never been completely sold on Fujio. I think he sort of blows hot and cold. Which is maybe a side effect of being one of those players who's not quite good enough yet for his J1 team. So they just keep getting shopped around on loan. And I guess it's difficult to kind of find your feet when you're just sort of a gun for hire at that age. And yeah, Kodama looked very good in the flashes I saw of him at Sagamihara. So yeah, definitely has potential. But I think, yeah, there's neither of them, I don't think, are kind of sort of nailed on. You don't look at them and think, you know, That's definitely a player that's going to be driving them up the league 100%. But yeah, definitely they have potential to do well.
Yeah, fair enough. So I think we're pretty kind of lukewarm on Tokushima's chances as it stands. Similarly, let's talk about Oita Trinita, who finished 19th. In J1 last year and ended up being relegated. Of course, my perception of them is a little bit skewed by their run to the Emperor's Cup final. I think for a lot of neutrals like me, they were elevated by that, and we're kind of expecting maybe a better team than they actually were in terms of J-League, you know, J1 results last year. They've changed coaches, haven't they? Takahiro Shimotaira is the new man in the hot seat. And in terms of ins and outs, there's not really a great deal to really make note of. I don't think it's a very similar squad to the one that was relegated last year. So just based on that, really, it's hard for me to give them more than a sort of puncher's chance of getting into the playoffs. But am I missing something, Sean, with Oita?
I think I'd probably go the other way and say that I think because there's not been much turnover in the playing staff, that maybe I think they should be definitely looking for a playoff place at least. I think obviously changing the manager, Katen Osaka was there for a fair few years, and obviously, well, he overachieved. I think no one really expected them to get as far as they did and go back up to J1 as quickly as they did under him. But Shimo Taira is a, I think he's a decent coach actually. He got Yokohama FC promoted two, three years ago now, wasn't it? And he's reasonably well thought of. I think the players that have played under him have spoken to a couple of them, and they say, yeah, he's like a sort of a, I don't know how you'd put it, like a kind of honest, you know, he's straight to the point. He's open with the players. So I think, yeah, I think he should be able to build a decent team spirit. The fact that they haven't really lost anyone, I think, except for them, Enrique Trevisan, who's gone to FC Tokyo, like you said, it looks pretty much a settled team. They've brought in Eduardo Neto, who was very good at Kawasaki probably, what, 4 or 5 years ago now, and then went on to Nagoya and didn't do quite as well. But for J2, if he's still... You never know with Brazilians, you know, once they've gone back home for a year or two, you never know what, how can we put this politely? You never know how his motivation is going to be now that he's back. Is he going to be as mobile physically and mentally? But if he's anywhere near the levels that he was at 4 or 5 years ago, I think in J2, he should be a very, very good player. So, yeah, I think Oita, yeah, obviously changing the coach, you never know how that's going to affect the team overall, but keeping the bulk of the team in place, yeah, I think they should be okay for a playoff place at least.
Okay. You're a bit more positive on Oita than me, but you also know a bit more about the squad, so I'll accept that. I'll take that. I think they've also lost William Pop, right, the goalkeeper, who's gone to Machida. So I think that there will be.
Did he play much last year? I thought Takagi not first choice.
Oh well, again, this is why you're on to tell me these things. I thought it looked like a big miss, but yeah, maybe that's right. I'd have to check.
I remember Pop played a lot for Okai. Was he at Okayama? I think he was at Okayama, and he played a lot. And then when he went back to Oita, I remember thinking, oh, maybe he's gone there to challenge, yeah, for the first thing. But then I remember the games I saw, definitely towards the end, like you said, the Emperor's Cup final, Takagi was definitely in goal for that. But I don't know. Hang on, let me check now. I'm just, as you might be able to tell, I'm stalling for time as I look up the stats from last year. Where is Pop? Oh, Pop played 14. Yeah, he played 14 games last year. So, yeah, he played a decent amount, I suppose. Takagi, yeah, played the other 24, so they split it between the two of them.
I think you're right to say that Enrique Trevisan is probably the biggest player going out, because who's going to score equalisers for them in the last minute of games now, you know, heading balls in.
God, I was cursing him for that. It was freezing. It was freezing in the stadium, and it was all set, and we were all happy to be going back into the warmth, and then he scored, so we had to go through another half an hour.
Sort of an inverse party pooper from a journalist's perspective, yes, I suppose. Yes. Yeah, I think you're right to pick up on Shimo Taira, the new coach. I think I don't know if you've watched the documentary about Yokohama FC on DAZN, but he's obviously featured in that because it's covering the season where he got sacked quite early on. But he comes across very well in that. I think he is probably popular with players, as you said. Incredible, kind of. He always looks like he's wearing eyeshadow somehow. I don't know if anybody you know, checks that out. I mean, he's got.
There's a few like that though. Misha Petrovic always looks like he's got. He's a big fan of like sort of 80s hair metal.
Yeah, that's kind of that's definitely the vibe he's going for. So we'll see what he can do with Oita. I think there is, my opinion is, to be honest, a little bit similar to Tokushima. It looks like a pretty solid, upwardly mobile J2 squad to me. I think Arata Watanabe up front, who has had his injury problems, I think, over the last couple of years, is a good guy to have up top. And I think there is quality in the rest of the team, as you said. But whether that will be enough to get them into the top six, I guess we have to wait and see.
I just feel like a lot of them have done it. Maybe not a lot of them, but I feel like, looking at the players, it looks like they've done it in J2 before. I think like the likes of Kagawa, Misao, I think. I don't know if he was at Shonan in J1, J2 maybe, or J1, but Yamato Machida as well did well when he was at Jeff in J2. So Koide, you know, these players, I think they've played in J2 before. So sometimes when teams come down from J1 and it's like, comparatively speaking, like a big boy, and they come down and they feel like J2 is kind of beneath them, and you know, maybe their motivation subconsciously drops off a bit because they feel they don't need to be at the same level. But looking at the players, you know, they all look like they kind of, most of them, it looks like they know, you know, they've been there before, they know what it takes. So I don't feel like they'll feel they're too good for it. So yeah, I think they should be okay. But
fair enough. Solid, yes. Solid and dependable squad to to count on for Shimotaro. Okay, yeah, fair enough. Well, how about Sendai, Sean? They ended up 19th in the J1 table last season, and that kind of necessitated a change of coach. Masato Harasaki is the new man in the hot seat at Yurtech Stadium. I don't know much about him, or in fact, let's be full and frank, I don't know anything about him, so I'm hoping you can tell me something. In terms of players going out, I only made a note of one, but it's a biggie in every sense, isn't it? Jakub Slovic, the sort of impressive goalkeeper, has moved on to FC Tokyo. In terms of players coming in, there are one or two eye-catching ones. Yasushi Endo from Kashima is one. Takumi Nagara coming in from Nagasaki, I also like him a lot. And Masato Nakayama, a big sort of a battering ram, but also quite skillful forward from Mito. Just my initial reactions, I think their squad looks a bit more primed for a playoff push than Tokushima or Oita's. But I don't know if you go along with that. What do you make of Sendai's business, Sean?
Yeah, I'm not sure about them. I think they were really they looked like a team for a good few years who were kind of clinging on in the first division. And I think bringing Tegura Mori back last season was kind of a last roll of the dice to sort of Manchester United bringing in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, you know, a last go at trying to bring back the good times that, you know, from the past. And it obviously failed fairly spectacularly. They looked like a dead team walking. I don't know how you'd say it, but yeah, they never really looked like they were going to stick around much longer. And I feel like now they've dropped down. Yeah, you looking at the ins and outs, and I don't know, it just seems a bit of a mishmash. I'm not really sure what, you know, who the key players are going to be. I do like Yasushi Endo, but he's been a bit part player at Kashima now for a good few years. Is he going to be able to come in and play every week and reach the same levels that he was at, you know, sort of 5 years ago? Kamen Togashi up front is one of those players that I always think, how can I put it nicely? I always think he's better than he is. I always see, when I see his name on the team sheet, I'm like, oh yeah, he's decent. And then when I look closely at his stats or you know, his play, I'm always kind of slightly underwhelmed. So I don't look at him and feel like, yeah, he's going to bang in sort of the 20 goals that you need to win the league. Yeah, obviously losing Slovic is big, but you'd have to hope that they're not as bad defensively in J2 as they were in J1, that they can, you know, not give up as many chances. So maybe you don't need your goalkeeper to be quite so busy and effective as he was last year. And yeah, bringing in a manager who I think it's his first ever job as like a full-time manager. He basically before he took over at the end of last year for the last, last two games, maybe he took over. He'd basically just sort of been one of those guys that floats around on the coaching staff, coaching youth teams, or, you know, one of the sort of the coaches working under the main manager. I think he'd been at Sendai and Omiya and Nagasaki over the previous sort of, I think, sort of 15 years or so. So it's his first time as the manager. So, and you never really know in those cases how the players are going to take to them. You know, if he's the kind of the good cop to the manager's bad cop, and the players don't feel the same level of tension under him, if he's able to come in and establish himself as the boss and really sort of instill his identity on the team. We don't really know yet, because he's only had the two games. We don't know what kind of coach he's going to be. And again, they've dropped down, so you don't know how they're going to play. But the way Sendai played was very, how can we put it, economical. They weren't particularly imaginative going forwards. I think I got a great stat. Where is it? They scored 31 times in the league, and 15 of them came from set pieces. So pretty much half of their goals. So they only scored 16 goals from open play in 38 matches, which is not a great look, is it?
I think Tochigi would be proud of a stat like that.
Tochigi against Sendai. Oof, there's a fixture. There's a fixture for this season. Honestly, I don't really know. The ins and outs, yeah, it's hard to say, but I personally wouldn't be surprised if they didn't sort of struggle, and I think, yeah, they should be, you'd think they should be pushing for a playoff place by the end of the season, just because there's never much between teams in sort of mid-table and the playoffs once it comes to the crunch. But I wouldn't be surprised if they maybe need a year or two, kind of like we've had with Niigata, and you know, Vara now have been down for a couple of years. I wonder if maybe the finally dropping through the trapdoor, they might need to realign for a year or two and just get their bearings again.
Yeah, I think that sounds like good analysis to me. And I think Masato Harasaki, unfortunately, just the nature of the beast, he's going to be an early contender to sort of lead the sack race, isn't he, if things don't go well early on at Sendai. And I think you can see perhaps, and this is true for Tokushima and Oita as well, financially, they're obviously quite severely constrained, aren't they, in terms of players they can bring in. I agree with you, Endo, Nagara, Nakayama, all good signings. They've also brought in Masashi Wakasa from Tokyo Verdy in defence, who had a pretty poor year, as did quite a few Verdy centre-backs in 2021. So that is a bit of a head-scratcher for me. If you're building a promotion project, he's a really nice guy, clearly, which I always seem to say, but I'm not. He did not have a good 12 months at all last year. They also brought back Ryan Yonggi from Tosu, who, of course, is an absolute Sendai legend. But again, that's definitely an emotional.
Yeah, I wonder if that's maybe more with an eye to just maybe he's looking to his next career as a coach or something, because you tend to get that quite a bit. You mentioned Verdy there. They brought in Tommy Sauer last year, right, from Sagamihara, and he barely played. So I wonder if maybe clubs do that. There's a lot of sort of loyalty, yeah, to ex, what do they call them, legend players. So
after Golden Week, Harasaki out and Ryan Yonggi as interim manager.
To mastermind their surge to the title, yeah. You heard it here first.
Yeah, I think Sendai might agree with you, Sean, because just a quick... I plan to prepare a massive J2 team slogan quiz for you. And due to my work schedule, it's not actuated. I have to give you that next time, maybe.
Oh, what?
I got one. It's disappointing. Okay. It's disappointing. Sendai's slogan for 2022, Sean, you got three choices. Did they go for A, rise up, B, crawl up, or C, give up?
I think I know. I think I might have seen this. It's the middle one, isn't it? It's crawl up.
Crawl up. So they're obviously they've got one eye on doing things the hard way in 2022. Crawl up.
It's not an original thought for me at all. But I always wonder why clubs don't check this with a native speaker. It's really not difficult these days. Every J League club, I think, must have an English, American, Australian, Kenyan, Nigerian fan out in the sticks somewhere. You probably have, there'll be foreigners who are going to watch the team. There'll be, you know, there are foreigners all around. And it's not difficult now with the internet, with social media, for a club to, you know, 2-3 degrees of separation just before you pull the trigger to check. And the weird thing actually is, now I'm saying that, there is a guy who works at Sendai who speaks fantastic English, but I guess he's just not in that, maybe he's not in that division, so it just didn't come across his desk. But his desk,
I was going to say, you're throwing him under the bus there.
I just thought if he was involved in it, I better not mention his name just in case he was, but I always wonder why they don't just run it by someone and go, look, does this look all right? Obviously Shimizu are the go-to example in recent years, but I do always wonder why, I always say this to people as well, like just with menus sometimes, you go into a restaurant and you look at the English menu, and it's great that, you know, the places have made an effort to do that, to appeal to people who can't read Japanese or to tourists, but sometimes it makes it even more confusing. And I do think, why don't they just say to the, you know, the local gaijin who pops in from time to time, look, can you just give this a read through? We'll give you lunch on the house today. Can you just give it a quick skim?
You see, I see what you're saying, Sean, and I think in all logic, you're absolutely right. But I think it's one of the charming and appealing things about the J-League. And if I became chairman, it would be compulsory for teams to have an English slogan that didn't really make sense or was funny or an innuendo. Yeah, I mean,
So you'd have an English native speaker checking it to ensure that it doesn't make sense.
Correct, or yeah. Trying to make it sort of dirtier or more lewd if possible. just because I think it's one of the things that makes it fun. I mean, like you said, I think in the past I used to worry that clubs would be embarrassed by it, but they keep doing it, so they obviously don't mind.
Well, I guess it gets them interactions. The joke is on us. Maybe us talking about it and stuff. Maybe they're going, idiots, they fell for it again. Look, they're spreading them.
Well, all that, all Shimizu's merchandise with Penetrate on it sold out.
Yeah,
so
maybe that's
they're two steps ahead of us. So, what would you go for if you were in charge of coming up with a slogan for a J League team? What do you think you'd go for?
I'm a big fan. Well, I think not
something like balls deep or something.
Yeah, or like never apologize, never explain, something like that. But I think I really liked Hachinohe. I think had full blast for 2 years
full
in a
blast,
row.
That's good.
So I quite like that one. But I think anything like full power or maximum overdrive or someone had over the limit a few years ago. Which
so basically anything that sounds like a Stallone movie from the 80s is you're on board.
Commando, yeah, something like that. Oh, yeah, let's go Commando would probably be one that I would go with. Yeah,
go Commando. Jesus, that is actually, I can imagine that happening. Yeah.
All right, Sean, this digression has sustained us for long enough, and I think a spin-off podcast about slogans is surely only a matter of time.
Yes.
We should stay focused on the task in hand. I think that would be another one. Stay focused might be another good slogan. For the pod anyway. So we've talked about Tokushima, Oita, and Sendai. You know, question marks over there, sort of promotion chances for 2022. The team that finished bottom of J1 last year, but conversely, I think it's actually got a pretty good chance of getting into the playoffs. This time around in J2, it's Yokohama FC. Yes, as I mentioned, they finished bottom of the table in J1 last year. They've changed managers. It's Shuhei Yamada, who I think his last job in the hot seat might have been at Sapporo, if I remember rightly.
Yes.
Quite a few players going in and out. I think whether it's because they're based in the metropolitan area or what, I don't know, they seem to be less affected financially than some of the other teams we've talked about already. So quite a few ins and outs on the playing side. Sean, Yokohama FC, what are we thinking?
I'm inclined to agree with you that I think of the teams that have dropped down, I think they look like the best placed to go back up. Yeah, Yomura, as you said, his last job was at Sapporo and he got them promoted. I think they won the league under him, but I may be wrong. I always forget once the season's finished who came first and second because they both essentially get the same prize. But I think he won the league and then he stayed on in J1 and wasn't expected to keep them up, but did kind of overachieved and kept them up. And then was replaced. Not only was he replaced, but he was kind of demoted back to being to Misha's assistant, which quite a few people were a bit surprised about. He stuck around for another few years and is now breaking out again on his own. And I always liked him. He came across as kind of a likable guy. It seems like he gets the players on board. I think he was at Sapporo for a while as like a kind of a youth team coach as well. So he's got that experience of bringing through the young players and kind of sort of grooming them, as it were, for the first team. So I think, he's a decent appointment for them. And it's quite nice to see someone, like him come in rather than, there's a lot of kind of the same old faces. They could have gone for a kind of an older hand, a Sekizuka or Tigura Mori, or kind of just like a name appointment rather than looking more closely at what the coach has got, what they've done kind of recently. They've lost a few players. I think, losing Matsuo, he was kind of their key attacking player for the last couple of years. Tatsuki Seko as well has gone to Kawasaki Frontale, and he was solid in the middle of the park last year, one of the sort of few players who was fairly consistent. And obviously they kept Sven Brodersen, who was very, very good after he arrived midway through last season. So they've got a decent spine still in place. They've kept all of their foreigners, I think, from last year as well. Sadly, obviously, the King Kazu has moved on to to look for a few more minutes as he looks to develop his career. And yeah, they've bought in as well. They've brought in some steady players who I think could do well in J2. Wada came in from Marinos. Hasegawa, is it Tatsuya? I think it's Tatsuya or Tetsuya. I never know which way around. Has come in from Kawasaki, and he never looked quite good enough to be a regular at Kawasaki, but that's true of probably 90% of players in the J League, so that's no real criticism of him. I think he could flourish in J2. Masashi Kamikawa, the sort of left wing back, has come in from Nagasaki. He's had a lot of experience playing in J2 at various clubs. And yeah, Koki Ogawa's come in from Jubilo, and he was sort of the hot teen sensation ahead of the this, it would have been the Tokyo Olympics a few years ago. He was like the kind of the one all of Japanese media had their eyes on, and then he had a couple of quite big injuries, and then I guess that hit his confidence or whatever, and he hasn't really looked the same since. So I think, yeah, he could go one of two ways. He could either rediscover his form and make a comeback, or this, you know, I think, yeah, the Yokohama FC for a lot of players is a last chance saloon. So that's the kind of interesting one to keep an eye on. But yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you that overall, I think of the ones that have come down, they look like a kind of a steady option. I think, yeah, they should be in the mix for playoffs as well. Certainly, as you said, with the budget that they seemingly have to have, what is it? They've got five, six foreigners still on board. And yeah, you'd have to hope that with everything they've got in place. Again, I think if they don't start well and you're getting towards Golden Week and they're struggling, then maybe Yomada could be some questions could be starting to be asked of him.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think, yeah, you made the point that they've lost Yusuke Matsuo and Tatsuki Seko, which is obviously big shoes to fill. But I think it was kind of expected that they would leave. You know, because they'd caught the eye pretty much from the start to the finish of last season, hadn't they? Keeping Sven Brodersen in goal, I was pretty much certain he was going to leave and stay in J1. So I think that's a big boost for them. I think what will be interesting is I don't remember Yomada's play style really from his time at Sapporo, but Yokohama, see, they've lost a few of their important kind of wing players, haven't they? So like Maejima's gone to Fukuoka. And Maginho, who is pretty much the first choice right back, he's gone back to Kawasaki at the end of his loan. Matsuo is obviously, you know, the key attacker down the left side. So yeah, I think Kamikawa and Takumi Nakamura, who's coming from FC Tokyo as well, I think is a right. I'm not quite remember if he's left or right back, but you know, a side back if you like. And I guess the replacement for Matsuo is probably Ryoya Yamashita, isn't it? Who's coming from Tokyo Verde, kind of exciting young player with a little bit of a Malicia.
Yeah, I've never really understood what it is he brings. He runs really fast. He's very fast, which commentators here get very excited about. But he seems. Maybe this is good for him, but he reminds me a bit of what's his name? Is it Hiroto Nakagawa at Marinos, who had a couple of spells on loan at J2 clubs, and I thought he was rubbish. I thought he was just very fast, but had no end product. He always seemed to lose his head once he got to the byline or in front of goal. So I was telling everyone that would listen that he wasn't very good when he went back to Marinos. And then he won the Player of the Year award when they won the league. So, yeah, Yamashita reminds me a bit of that in that he's very quick. It seems like he'd be a nightmare to play against as a defender. But I've never really been sold on his end product. I'm not really sure. He's still reasonably young, I think. So, yeah, he's obviously got time to hone those skills. And maybe, yeah, a change of scenery, new environment. He could add something to his game. So, yeah, book it now. He'll be J1 Player of the Year in 2025.
Yeah, well, I didn't mean to insinuate that he's in Matsuo's class, because I don't think he is, but I think he's got potential, like you said. By Verdi standards, he's a veteran, because I think he's probably 22 or 23 now. Well, but yes, in real terms, he's still a young player. Yes. And yeah, I think you mentioned that defenders don't like playing against him. I think one of the reasons for that is he's not afraid to initiate contact, should we say? And then make sure that the referee sees that as well. So. I'm hot and cold on him. I think sometimes he doesn't, you know, he cheats basically. But yeah, I think he's got the potential to be a good player. And Yokohama FC will need a pace in the wide positions if they're going to get anywhere. I think.
Yes.
this season. So yeah, he'll be an important player, you know, de facto in that sense, I think. And Koki Ogawa, yeah, you're right to mention, but it becomes sort of enigmatic now. I think we can finally say, because he had a couple of good years and was a golden boy, and then it's not been happening for him for whatever reason. So yeah, lots to. I think Yokohama, see, again, there's question marks, but I think, I don't know if it's just bias because I live in Yokohama, but I think that team looks set for a kind of reasonable top six tilt, reasonable top six push, I think.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I'd certainly be surprised if they weren't in the mix for the playoffs. You know, if they were sitting down in kind of Jeff United territory with four or five games to go, I'd certainly be surprised.
Yeah, fair enough. No, all good, Sean. Well, on that note, should we take a quick recording break, Sean? Just for comfort. When we come back, we can talk about a couple of other teams before I let you go swimming, which is what you want to do, I think, after this, isn't it? So let's take a quick break, and then we'll talk about some of the other teams that will be in the playoff mix, we think. Extra time. Welcome back, everyone. Sean and I are going to continue with our J2 season preview. We're just going to talk about three more teams in this episode, Sean. And I titled this section sort of top playoff contenders, which might have been a bit optimistic, but I was in a hurry and you know, these things happen. So let's talk about Kofu, first of all. I make them a playoff contender for this season because they finished third in J2 last year. They've not really impressed me with the sort of decisions they've made in the winter transfer window, though. They've changed coaches because Akira Ito's moved up to J1 with Iwata. The new man at Kofu at the JIT Recycling Stadium, which I couldn't resist mentioning, is Tatsuma Yoshida. Not the most inspiring appointment, you have to say. In terms of players coming in, the only one that I highlighted is Nagi Matsumoto on loan from Seretse Osaka, I think is an intriguing signing. In terms of players going out, they've lost the gangly defender Mendes to Kyoto, Jinizu Misawa has gone back to Omiya, Ryotaro Nakamura to Kashima, and Gakuto Notsuda's loan from Hiroshima's finished and he's gone back. So four players that were, you know, regular in around the first team have left. Am I missing something with Kofu, Sean? It seems like they're in danger of sort of wasting the potential from last season here. I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I think Kofu will always finish sixth. They'll always find a way. And I think, yeah, I agree that Yoshida is not the most inspiring, but I also don't think he's a terrible appointment. I was never really that sold when they first hired his predecessor, Ito. I never really thought he would do that much. But Kofu, yeah, they pretty much, irrespective of who their manager is, they always seem to set up in a kind of, you know, fairly solid defensive approach and look not to get beaten, and then have kind of like tricky either wide players or kind of those sort of in behind the striker, a couple of attacking midfielders looking to create, and then there'll usually be a useless Brazilian kind of plodding around in front of them, not doing much. And that Brazilian will change two or three times during the season, depending on on which new Brazilian they bring in. But it always seems to be enough for them to be there or thereabouts. And yeah, I think the players that have gone, I don't know. I don't know if any of them are really, well, I wouldn't really class any of them. Like, you know, Tokushima, when we talked about them, they'd lost kind of key players. Whereas the players who've gone from Kofu, yeah, Mendes was decent, but I don't think he's irreplaceable. And Notsuda, yeah, again, sort of steady player, but he never really looked a cut above the other options that they had in central midfield. So they've still got reasonable depth in most positions. I like in attacking midfield, they've got Hasegawa and Torikai, who both looked a couple of young players who both looked good in flashes last year. And yeah, I mean, the ones that have gone out, yeah, there's not really much, I don't think. Yeah, you mentioned Matsumoto coming in. He didn't really play much. I think he was at Tochigi last year as well and didn't really get many chances. So he's a bit of an unknown quantity. But yeah, there's another option to come in, I guess, in place of Notsuda for the central midfield. And they brought in Ishikawa as well from Omiya, who looked pretty good at Shonan a few years ago. And then I think he went back to Omiya. I've got a feeling he might have come through the youth team at Omiya. He's gone in and he's like a kind of, yeah, sort of a steady sort of box-to-box, in my image. You know, I think he's a kind of box-to-box sort of central midfielder. So I think they've kind of covered for the players that have gone out. And yeah, obviously the change of manager, you need a little bit of time to bed in. But I think Yoshida was the guy. He went to Singapore, right? He was the Singapore national team manager, and he seems to have been reasonably popular over there. So yeah, I think I'm always I've always got some, maybe sounds a bit patronizing, but I always kind of respect the Japanese coaches that do go outside of Japan and try and add something different. I think Japanese football, well, Japanese society, as a as an island country, as we know well, coming from where we do, is can tend to be quite insular. So I think it's good for coaches to go out and see. Obviously, Singapore, the level of football in Singapore, I would assume, is not as high as it is here. But to learn some new things, you know, I think he's. I saw a couple of videos of him, you know, doing press conferences and stuff in English. So he's obviously, you know, looked to add new new skills sort of on and off the pitch. So I think, yeah, maybe he'll come back and maybe have a few slightly new things to bring. So I think, yeah, it's an interesting one. And I do think that Kofu will probably, I certainly can't see them sort of storm into the title or anything like that. But I certainly think, yeah, there will be, they should be in the mix as they always are.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I think I always am looking for them to kind of build on the sixth place finish or fifth place finish. But I suppose in fairness, the last couple of years, I think they've done fourth and third. So perhaps they are heading in the right direction. And I'm just a bit too impatient or too critical. Good shout on Hasegawa and Torikai, by the way. I think it was Torikai who scored my goal of the season last year when he scored one from just inside his own half, on the halfway line, which is a fantastic goal. So yeah, they do have that kind of technical ability as well as being quite rugged and difficult to beat. So yeah, I don't know if it's something, I just, there's like an image problem somehow with me and Kofu where they're a lot better than I always give them credit for. So apologies to any Kofu fans who may be listening. Let's talk about Nagasaki, Sean. They finished fourth last year after finishing third in 2020. And I was talking to Stuart Smith recently, and he was saying he thinks they're sort of primed for a serious promotion challenge this year. I'm inclined to agree. Hiroshi Matsuda is still a coach after a pretty impressive second half of the season, you know, last year after coming in midway through. Quite a busy transfer window, lots of ins and outs, some of them quite eye-catching, I think. So do you go along with that, Sean, Nagasaki being a strong promotion contender, or are Stu and I hopelessly optimistic?
No, I think they should be, yeah. You're right, I think Matsuda did a lot better than certainly I expected once he came in and took over. I thought they were just going to kind of float around in the middle. But I was looking at their fixtures. I think he was in charge for 30 games in the end last year, and they only lost four of them. Which is if they can sort of maintain that percentage over the course of a whole season, then they'll be very much in the mix. Possibly, yeah, even for automatic promotion. They've got a lot of options up front. Uenaka was really impressed me last year. Really kind of. Uncharacteristically, maybe for a young Japanese striker, he looked fairly lethal. You know, when the chances came, he tended to take them. They've still got Edgar Junior as well. Ken Tokuro is still around, and obviously Victor Ibarbo, the goal machine, is inexplicably, I think, still seems to have a contract there. I don't know. He must have signed him to like a 5-year contract or something when they brought him in. I don't know how many games he played last year off the top of my head, but certainly wasn't many. And yeah, Kyle Cesar really came into his own last year. He was good a couple of years ago, but I think last year, his name Hiroki Akino, the other central midfielder, was out injured for most of the year, and he was the main man a couple of years ago, and Kyle really came into his own without Akino there. He's taken the number 10 shirt this year, which in Japan is obviously a big deal, and he was playing alongside Kuwasaki in the middle towards the end of last season, and they seemed to link up really well. And yeah, they lost Maikuma, and I think Wellington, I don't know how you say it, Wellington Hato, I'm not sure on the Portuguese pronunciation, but those two left, Nagura left, but yeah, he didn't really play a lot last year, so I don't know if, yeah, I don't really think either of the departures are impossible to cover. And yeah, obviously they've brought in Cristiano from Kashiwa, who is getting on in years, But yeah, still clearly is a very, very good player at J2. If he can stay fit, I think yeah he will definitely be one of the standout players in J2 this year. And then for Maikum, I think they brought in Okui, who I don't know how much he played for Shimizu, but I remember when he was at Omiya, I always used to quite like him. He's a kind of very aggressive, sort of attack-minded fullback. I don't know if I think he plays on the right, but maybe he's one of those that can play either. And I think Shunki Takahashi came in as well. So they brought in a couple of options who are obviously slightly more advanced in years than Maikuma, but that have been around the block a bit. So I think they should be able to cover. So yeah, I'd certainly think Nagasaki, of the teams we've discussed so far, I think they're one that I would probably put into my short list of sort of potential automatic promotion challenges, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement. And I think that the point that you made earlier talking about, I think it was, I can't remember which team we were talking about in part one, but, you know, Nagasaki have lost quite a few players from the squad, but not that many. There isn't really anybody irreplaceable, apart from possibly, say, Maikuma, who I think is, you know, is too good now, has shown that he's too good for J2 level. But, you know, he is sort of basically the right back, wasn't he? And you mentioned they've got cover in Shunki Takahashi and Ryo Okui. I'd also mention Hijiri Kato, who played a few games, and I'm with you. I'm not sure if he's predominantly the right back or left back. I think right back's probably his best. Is he left? Is he?
Yeah.
Okay, so he came into his own when he played, you know, last year. So I think he's ready to step up and be a regular if necessary. I'd also give a shout out to Koya Okuda, who's joined from Mito, who I think is the kind of player who sort of goes under the radar a little bit.
Yeah.
But is a very, very good player who's obviously ready to you know, step up to the next level. So,
well, that's an interesting one, yeah, because he's 27. I didn't really know much about him, and last year, yeah, he was fairly steady for Mito last year, and then yeah, kind of when I saw the transfer, I looked at his date of birth and was like, God, yeah, he's 27, which I guess in Japan is technically it could still be kind of young. I guess if he went to uni and didn't, yeah, he did go to uni. He went to Kanagawa Uni. There you go. And then he was at YSCC and then Mito. So yeah, if he went from uni 22, YSCC for a year or 2 year, 24, 2 years at Mito. Yeah, so 27, I guess, is well, it is young, isn't it? We're both men of slightly more advanced years. So
well, let's head that off before it goes into a dark place. But yeah, I think Koi Okada, I think he was really just set free last year by the system that Mito played and Tadahiro Akiba played. So whether that'll be replicated at Nagasaki, we'll wait to see. They're not quite the same outfit as Mito. No. But yeah, and also Cristiano's always good value. I mean, I think one thing Nagasaki squad was lacking was someone to just shoot from 40 yards at random. So that'll be added this year. And you're right to mention Akino, who will be, like, I think, a new signing if he's fitting.
Yeah, I think he had surgery. I think I saw a press release recently saying he'd had surgery, but I didn't look closely at the date. Sometimes they announce it, you know, like a month or two after it's happened. I'd hope that he did it towards the end of last season with the aim of coming back soon. But yeah, because he was very good a couple of years ago. So fingers crossed when he is back, he's still able to play at the same level. Because yeah, him and Kyle Cesar, Kuwasaki now has come in as well, would certainly make them a decent proposition.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think the teams we've discussed so far, you know, with six teams in, I think Nagasaki are the ones I'm expecting to finish highest, so far anyway. But how about Machida, Sean? We'll finish this pod by talking about them. They finished fifth last year, 2021. It's a huge improvement on the season before, where I think they were 16th or possibly even 19th. I think they were way down the table. Ranko Popovic is the manager again, but their kind of transfer window is fairly muted, I think you could say. Not too many ins and outs. We talked about already, William Pop has come in, a goalkeeper from Oita.
Yeah.
Kai Miki's turned his loan from Yamagata into a permanent move. Jun Okano, another defender's come in from Jeff United. Hijiri Onaga from Omiya's come in midfield. And the only real box office one is probably Kazuma Yamaguchi, who's joined on loan from Matsumoto. In terms of players going out, the big one is Kaina Yoshio, right? His loan from Yokohama Marinos has finished, and I think he was on 10 goals and 10 assists last season, so he's a big miss. But obviously the idea is Kazuma Yamaguchi is going to replace him. Feels like evolution rather than the revolution at Machida. Sean, what do you think?
Yeah, I I completely agree. I actually, not to name drop, but I did. So I had a chat with Popovich a couple of weeks ago, just to wish him a happy new year and stuff. Because I've known him since he was down in Oita. First time I met him was when he was managing Oita, like the year I moved here. So yeah, sort of keep in touch from time to time. And I was he seemed fairly confident. He said he did want to keep Yoshio. He said he was hopeful at the end of last season that Yoshio was going to stick around. They felt that they could, you know, get another year, that maybe he would, it would benefit him as well to play another year, you know, regularly, rather than go back to Marinos and maybe not get quite so many chances. But yeah, he said he was happy to, they wanted to bring in Yamaguchi before he signed for Matsumoto. When he left Mito, he said they tried to sign him then, but didn't get him. So he said he was obviously happy to get the chance again. And he said, yeah, he's hopeful that if he can rediscover the form he had at Mito back in 2020? I guess it was 2019, wasn't it? The last sort of proper season before COVID. If he can rediscover that form, then yeah, he said he's really kind of excited about what that could add. He did say he's still kind of hopeful of adding another center back. They did bring Okano, as you said, but I think Mizumoto moved on. He didn't really play much last year, so they've got Takahashi and Fukatsu. But yeah, Fukatsu is, I think, probably 38, 39 now. He's really getting on. So at some point, you're obviously going to have to wonder about tiredness or injury creeping in. So I think centre back, yeah, maybe is one area. They brought in Onaga, the left back from Omiya, to add an option, because they've got Okamura seems to be the first choice. And yeah, you mentioned Miki for the right, but yeah, Onaga, I think Okamura can play on the right as well. So Onaga coming in adds a little bit of depth. And yeah, I think William Pop coming in is a good signing. He was very good at I think it was Okayama a couple of years ago. Then he went back to Oita, as we touched upon, and didn't get regular minutes. And I think last year, I always get his name wrong. Is it Fukui or Fukai? Who was their goalkeeper? Machida. Fukui, isn't it? Yeah. And I was never really convinced by him. He always looked like he had a mistake in him. And yeah, with Machida in the end, we're not a million miles away. I think last year, yeah, they obviously would have, if they were playoffs, they'd have been involved. So I think adding a solid keeper to maybe, you know, even if that only saves you 2, 3, 4 points over the year, it can make all the difference once the pushing and shoving comes to an end. So I think, yeah, I think they'll be very disappointed, I think, if they're not in and around the same area as last year. They've still got Dudu and Chong Tese and Nakashima up front, who, again, they're all a year older again. So maybe they might just be lacking goals. But if Yamaguchi can find the net as much as he did at Mito, I think I was looking at their pre-season games a couple of days ago, I think he scored a hat-trick in one. It's always a bit misleading because some of those pre-season games are sort of like, you know, 4x45-minute matches against high school teams. So you don't know what kind of opponent they're playing. But yeah, it seems like he's still got the scoring touch. So I think Yamaguchi, Hirato, obviously Taiki Hirato is still there. I always forget his first name. Is it Kaishu Sano? Yeah, he added a few more goals from central midfield last year. And then with Ota, I want to say Shusuke Ota. Yeah, he's another one who maybe, I think, similar to what you said with Okada at Varun, kind of flies a little bit under the radar. I think at J2, he's a solid option. And obviously, Arya Jasuru Hasegawa is still on the books too. So I think they should have enough to be in the same kind of area as last season.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think when I look at that squad, I think playoffs are very possible and automatic promotion quite unlikely, I think. Mm. And what I base that on is, I think you mentioned the forwards who I think are quite imposing, aren't they? Dudu, Chong Tese and Nakashima. You know, any two of those three is going to be a handful for a J2 backline, but they're lacking pace, I think, in that department. Yeah. And, you know, losing Yoshio is losing some pace. So I think there's pressure on Yamaguchi, I suppose, will be on one flank, and maybe Shusuke Ota on the other. You know, they'll have to do the running, won't they? So that's a problem if either of those gets injured. You know, for example, I think that perhaps the squad depth isn't quite there. And you mentioned Fukatsu and Takahashi at centre-back. That'd be a concern for me. I think they're a bit short at centre-back, and they're certainly short of pace there, even if everybody's fit.
Yes, and also those two are both... They're either gonna get an injury or a yellow card. You'd assume every couple of weeks between them.
Well, I think you're rolling the dice, aren't you? Because you've got a guy who's, you mentioned, Fukatsu's old and susceptible to injury. Takahashi's younger but susceptible to bouts of idiocy. And you know, you've also got something we haven't mentioned for an hour, really, Sean, which is kind of nice, but we better mention it, is COVID and the fact that, as it stands, as we're talking right now at the end of January, you know, we're kind of, Tokyo especially is in the middle of this kind of Omicron wave, and we just don't know, right, what that's going to lead to later in the season. I mean, there are signs that the wave is peaking now in Tokyo and the metropolitan areas, certainly, so perhaps by February and the season kickoff, everything's calm down, but I would certainly be looking for it's possible Ranko Popovic knows more about the Matthews squad than me. Let's get out there and get that out there straight away. But I would be perhaps looking for another centre back or two, maybe someone fast who could be deployed up front to run around a bit. I don't know, but you could perhaps put that to him next time you talk to me.
I will do. Well, yeah, we'll have to get him on. We'll get him on the pod, and you can tell him your concerns.
Yeah, I think I'll say, like, someone says you need another centre-back. I don't think I'd be confident.
Been said, some people might think that...
Get me the name of that guy, the guy at Sendai, the English speaker at Sendai. So, yeah, this guy at Sendai thinks you need more defence. All right. Yeah, no, I think I'm inclined to agree, Sean. I think Matsuda, they finished fifth last year, apart from Kaina Yoshio. It's the same squad, more or less. So I think expecting a playoff place in 2022, not unreasonable at all. But, interesting to see how they get there, I think. Because I wonder if there'll be an evolution of the playing style from last year, whether it'll be more of the same. Areja Hasuda Hasegawa spent a lot of time up front, for example, last year, which is kind of a surprise to me in the first place, but also it works surprisingly well.
Well, I'm wondering if you were saying about the lack of pace with the sort of the three options they've got for the I think they pretty much play like one sort of centre forward, and then they play someone just in behind. So I'm kind of wondering if Yamaguchi, because that's the kind of role he played when he was at Mito, he kind of cheated. He kind of played in that role that all of us English guys used to want to play when you'd play down the park with your mates, you know, in the hole, as we used to call it, where you basically don't have to do any defending and you don't really have to deal with the centre-back. You just kind of cheat. He tended to do that and hang off a bit and then kind of burst through. And I think, the likes of Taiki Hirato and Kaisu Sano are more than capable of playing the balls in behind. So if the centre forward can kind of drag the opposing centre backs out of position, then I think the likes of Yamaguchi, Hirato, Ota are kind of definitely have the ability to capitalise on that. So maybe that's what they're thinking for this year. But it'd definitely be interesting to see if they can match what they did last year, and maybe even build on it slightly.
Well, let's make sure you're around if I do ever get to talk to Popovic about the squad depth, because you can probably dig me out of any holes that I get myself into.
No. He's a very nice guy. He seems a bit scary. If you just see him when he's shouting at the referees during the games, he seems a bit scary, but he's a nice guy. So, you won't need me chaperoning.
I'll disarm him. I say, I thought it was a penalty as well. Yeah, Ranko, yeah. So, I think in the hole would be a pretty good slogan for a J-League team, I think. In the hole 2022. Yeah. Or I think we should make it in a hole, which would be even better.
In a hole,
I think good. I suppose I was thinking what Japanese people would say, one top, one shadow, right? Would be the vernacular.
One top, one shadow.
Yes, okay. That's pretty much how we approach this podcast, Sean. I think you were the top and I was the shadow. All right, Sean, on that note, I think we better leave it there for this part one of our season preview, if that's all right with you. Yeah, and hopefully we'll get you on sometime soon, maybe for a bit more preview action, or certainly during the season, to see how things are going. We can check in. But thanks for giving us some time today and giving us the benefits of your analysis and your intimate chats with Ranko Popovic. Much appreciated.
Not at all, mate. Yeah. Always a pleasure.
Wicked. All right. Well, let's get together soon, Sean. Thanks. And thanks to everyone for listening, as always. And please stay tuned. We have more season preview pod action coming up. We'll look at the rest of the J2 teams and see how they're shaping up for 2022. But that's all for now. Take care and enjoy your football. We'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.